Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithtimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I am so excited to welcome back a friend of the show, a repeated guest, the lovely, the talented Melissa Fabello. Yay! Applause, applause, applause. All right. So Melissa has been on the show a couple times before in audio form and also in vlog form. We've discussed feminist issues a few times. And today we are talking about media literacy. We're talking about Super Bowl owls. Super Bowl owls. Superb owl. Super Bowl. Super Bowl ads and the not buying it campaign. So welcome.
Thanks, Timmery.
So let's get started with what was the not buying it campaign is, was, whatever. Not buying
it. Present tense. It's present tense. The Not Buying It campaign is a social media campaign that was started by the organization Misrepresentation in an attempt to call out sexist advertising. The purpose, basically the way that it works, is that when a company puts out an advertisement that is sexist, which is very, very often, the hashtag not buying it, will be used to try to raise awareness about the fact that that ad is sexist and why it's bad and how people feel about it. So it's basically talking back to advertisers and companies via social media to say, hey, this sucks and we're not buying it.
And this has been going on for a while now. It wasn't just Super Bowl oriented. Like, it's been for how long?
They started it for the last Super Bowl. So Super Bowl 2010, technically. Because doesn't the Super Bowl go, like, backwards? Like, this was Super Bowl 2011. I mean, 2012, not 2013.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a thing. All right. So it started during the last Super Bowl, and it was specifically a campaign that was invented to call out sexist advertising during the Super Bowl and Super Bowl commercials, and then it just continued on. And so anytime that there was something sexist going on, the not buying it would be used. And people would just use it in general if they felt like it on Twitter. And every once in a while, every couple of months, Misrepresentation would find, like, a specific company to call out, and would start sort of a mini campaign to get people to call out the sexism in their advertising.
So you see a particular ad that is egregiously sexist and then just raise everyone's awareness of it so that they will contact the company? Is that the idea?
Essentially, people will tweet to the company, like, for instance, like, GoDaddy is, like, the repeat offender. And so it'll be like, hey, GoDaddy, you know, at the mention on Twitter, you know, this product, I don't want your product because you use women, you sexualize and objectify women, and we don't think it's cool, so we're going to take our business elsewhere. So, calling out the company and specifically letting them know why you're not happy with their ads.
And has this campaign elicited a reaction from the companies? Do they usually respond?
Yes, usually pretty negatively. Which maybe shouldn't be surprising if you have people using sexist ads in the first place. But sometimes some companies get mad and they'll say, you know, they'll respond very negatively. There was one company, for instance, Shoals Technology, in September had used a campaign that was, it was degrading to women overall. And they were calling their campaign, the tagline that they were using to sell their solar panels and the like racks or whatever they have to put them on, like the like nice rack, stupid. So, and they would, you know, have pictures of like large-breasted women. It's like, that doesn't make me want solar panels. And when we had, you know, called them out and we're like, hey, like, this is really not cool, we don't like this, and, you know, this isn't, if I'm ever in the market for solar panels, I won't call you, they responded really negatively. And they were like, well, you guys are stupid and women are stupid. Like, it was, like, very, like, frat boyish, like, sort of mentality that was, it was really bizarre, and, like, they were really mean. Some companies actually make change. I mean, GoDaddy hired a new advertising company after last year's debacle. This year's, their two ads during the Super Bowl this year weren't any better, but they did hire a whole new advertising company because they were like, oh, apparently we're not very good at advertising.
Well, I thought GoDaddy's a particularly interesting example because that's sort of always been their shtick. Mm-hmm. Like, since they came out, I can't remember seeing one of their ads where it wasn't selling a female body. Like, that was basically the gist of the ad. And so, like, it struck me as interesting that they, I mean, it was expected that they would be the one that would be called out the most. And to a certain degree, it sort of feels like, what is the purpose when they know already? Mm-hmm. This isn't like they're uninformed. It's not that this is a surprise to them. So, I mean, what is the aim then when you know that you're just telling them something that they're aware of?
That they're aware of and that they don't want to change. I think at the end of the day, what I feel the Not Buying It campaign is really about is about raising awareness and starting conversations that otherwise wouldn't be started. The Super Bowl is the most watched television event of the year in the United States. I don't think that a lot of the people who are watching the Super Bowl are doing so in order to be critical consumers. That's not the point of the Super Bowl overall. So I think that calling out sexist advertising specifically during the Super Bowl, one, is a really good idea because of the commercials are a really big deal and they're you know, expensive and supposed to be really good. I think they've gotten kind of shitty over the years, but the idea being we're going to engage people in a conversation that they probably wouldn't have thought of, you know, wouldn't have thought to had on their own. Trying to get new people, because you can spread the information that you have to other people who already have that information or already care, but that's not really helping you or the cause. It's more important to get people who wouldn't be thinking about it otherwise to start thinking about it. So to me, that's really, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is raising that kind of awareness.
So it's not even necessarily about the company doing anything at all or reacting in any way. It's more about, you know, who else might overhear the conversation.
I think that it would be awesome if the companies were like, hey, yeah, you're right, sexism sucks, and change their ways. But I don't think that that's going to happen. And really, I think that that's not going to happen, not because necessarily of the companies themselves, but just because of the way that advertising works. Advertising works in a way where sex and violence work really, really well in advertising. And the reason for that is because sex and violence is really hardwired in our brain, just for propagation reasons, that sex continues our species, violence will kill us and end the species. So we tend to pay attention really, really quickly to images of sex and violence. I think that's a lot of the reason why it's used so much. And I think the other problem, or the other thing that advertisers do, is they rely on tropes to get information out really, really quickly, because they only have, what, 30 seconds in an ad? You don't have that long to explain what's going on. So if you want your audience to understand that this character is supposed to be stupid, make her blonde. You never have to say it. Everyone will just already get it. So I think that advertising probably is going to be a lot more difficult to change than people's minds about advertising.
So one of the other concerns that comes up with these sort of campaigns is the fear of, and maybe not even fear, but the unintentional consequence that you're giving actually more, like, free press to companies that don't deserve it, that are doing something bad. And the Super Bowl is an exception because, like, people are going to see that. It is probably going to be hard to miss. It's likely to be something that people come across anyway. But in many cases, calling out sexist shit might actually just be free advertising. And what do you think about that?
I think that it's a fair argument. The problem that I see with it is when it comes to advertising, a lot of the purpose of advertising isn't necessarily to make you buy something, but to make you remember a name. And I think that's like a company like Ford or Dodge or Coca-Cola, for example. They don't really need any help. I think it's really weird that Coca-Cola has commercials at all. If Coca-Cola stopped having commercials, I wouldn't be like, I wonder if Coke still exists. You know, like, you see it everywhere. It's ubiquitous. You know that it exists. McDonald's, why do you have a commercial? Unless you have a new product. Like, you don't need to have a commercial. But it helps kind of stick things in your head and make them kind of stick. And I said all that to say that I just don't personally believe that someone is going to be on Facebook and say, oh, hey, Melissa is calling out Calvin Klein for being, you know, sexualizing in their advertisement. Let me click on this and read about this. And then tomorrow I'll be like, you know what? I'm glad that I looked at that Calvin Klein website. I think I'm going to go buy some underwear. I just don't think it happens like that. I don't think that it does. I think that if you buy Calvin Klein, you buy it whether you see the commercial or not. So I don't necessarily think that getting people that free press is actually damaging to the cause necessarily.
Okay. I mean, not to belabor this point, but for instance, there was a not buying it hashtag applied specifically to an ad for a TV show that was on, I think, FX. And I don't even remember the name because that's how many fucks I give. But the ad was intentionally sexist, like supremely offensive on purpose. It was just a guy sitting on a bench, like saying what it would, what he would have to drink in order to bang the woman walking by. And I was just taken aback by the number of people who were tweeting the ad, because I'm like, I would never have seen this otherwise. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't watch TV long enough to ever encounter it. And now I know about the show. And now if I retweet this, then all the people on my feed will also have the potential to see this ad. And it kind of seems like, well, that's what they were going for. And so, you know, that's sort of a fear that I have with this particular, not just letting it die on its own.
Have you watched the show?
No.
You didn't remember the name of the show either, nor did you remember what channel it was on. So I guess that ad didn't really do its job.
But then did the not buying it response to it do anything either?
I mean, think so, because you just brought it up and talked about it. And so I think that it raised enough of a feeling in you that we're having a conversation about it right now. And I think that that awareness and that discussion and that conversation is what's really important. During the campaign, the other night, during the Super Bowl, I had a troll. I don't know why I responded, but I had a troll who tweeted me and, you know, said something to the effect of, the easy thing to do, the easy solution to your problem is to shut off your TV. Grow up. And I responded, I said, my shutting off my TV does not stop the ads from being sexist. Troll said, neither does tweeting about it, which obviously I disagree with. But the point being, just if I don't watch it, or if I don't share it, or if I don't, that doesn't stop it from existing. It's still going to exist. The advertisements that were on the Super Bowl were still going to be on the Super Bowl regardless. So I think that it's more important to say, well, it's here, so let's talk about it. Because I am not enough of a force, I don't think anybody is, to stop the media. The media is a force unto itself. I can't stop the media. But what I can do is I can help people understand what they're seeing and help them consume it and digest it in a way that's more conscious and is more aware.
So a little bit ago, you mentioned the Calvin Klein ad that was objectifying. And I don't think that anybody could really disagree with the idea that it is. I mean, it's just a body. I mean, it's, the ad was for that dude's body. He's actually a trainer in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah. I've got like a 3 degrees of separation from him, from a friend's client's daughter's, he's her boyfriend sort of situation, which is the extent of things I know about him. But yeah, that ad is basically just selling that dude's like body, like that, without question. But I was surprised at the amount of negative reaction. And obviously, it's not more okay to objectify one group than another anyway. It's just like a general objection. But was it really so bad? I mean, was it really offensive? Like, what is the problem there?
I think that, and you know, I got some, I don't want to say backlash, I got a discussion out of tweeting about that. And it just happens that the tweet that I wrote about that ad was the one that like went really, really, really far and is like on like CNN. Like, I'm important. Yeah, so whatever. But I had written a tweet where I was like, you know, the answer to the objectification of women is not to objectify men. And someone had tweeted me back and was like, I think that you're taking it a little too far. And I asked why. And her response was that it's a body and bodies aren't inherently sexual. And that looking at a body is not necessarily objectifying. And I mean, we discussed it, she and I, and, you know, a little bit agreed to disagree. But I think part of why I feel like that ad got so much attention is because I think that people who are champions of women's rights and media literacy and all of that, spend so much time talking about women and the objectification of women. And I think that they get a lot of backlash from people that are like, well, what about men? What about men? What about men? And so I think that people are really quick to be like, oh, fuck, they're doing it to men too. No! Like, and, you know, see a naked male body, nearly naked male body, and, you know,
we can't be fully naked, or no, otherwise, how are you going to know what to buy?
Yeah. But I think people were really quick to call it out for that reason. But, you know, my argument was that when you... The problem with commercials and just media in general is that they present very limiting views of people. And I think the problem with that ad was, here's this ideal, big quote-unquote, ideal man. And I think that is what the problem is. Is the problem is people who are watching that and thinking, like men who might be watching that and thinking, like, oh, like, my body doesn't look like that. I can't buy underwear now. You know, like, or shit. I mean, but seriously, I think that the problem that it comes down to is that. It's just the, why do we have to present, we're looking at a man in his underwear, why does he have to look like that? Why does he have to be like this big, chiseled, godly looking man? Why can't he just be like the average dude who wants to buy underwear? And that's the same argument that people make for women. Like, if you look at Victoria's Secret commercials, or I was on Victoria's Secret website the other day because I wanted some lingerie and I just got so frustrated. It wasn't like an envious feeling or like a body hatred thing. I was just like, this is really annoying that I'm scrolling through here and every single model looks exactly the same and doesn't look like a real human being. Doesn't look like me, doesn't look like the people I know. And it's frustrating. It's just an annoying thing when you see the same thing thrown on your face all the time about what people are supposed to look like, and it's just very limiting.
One of the other ads that has generated a fair amount of controversy is the Audi one, where it's like a teenage boy who goes into the prom and evidently didn't have a date or something like that, and then just decides that he's going to go up to the queen, the prom queen, and, like, just kiss her, and then he gets decked and he leaves. And there's a lot of, like, okay, so just because you didn't get a date doesn't mean you're entitled to go kiss whoever you want, right? And you should ask before you kiss people. And then if somebody punches you in the face for kissing on a girl who doesn't want it, you're not the winner of the story, actually. So that's been sort of generating some controversy. Did you have anything you wanted to add about that?
I think that it definitely created some controversy. And I also think that the controversy caused some controversy because some people are saying, oh, this isn't a question of consent. Like, do you ask every time you kiss somebody, you know, et cetera, which I think is sort of a somewhat dangerous way to look at it, only because she very obviously flinches, did not expect that, possibly maybe had a boyfriend, which maybe is why the kid got knocked out. You know, a lot of questionable things going on. I saw someone had tweeted, though, and said, you know, we only saw, like, 15 seconds of the kid's life. Like, can we really make any judgments about what's going on here? But I think, like I said before, with the idea of tropes, when the idea is supposed to be that whatever you get out of that ad, like, they use specific tropes, basically. They use very specific things to make you get an idea. The idea that you got from that commercial was that this kid was kind of, I don't want to say uncool, but kind of nerdy, maybe. Didn't have a date, like you said. And then felt, quote-unquote, confident because he had the car, and he goes out, and he's like, well, I'm going to kiss the prom queen. Fuck this. And, you know, turns around and kisses her, and it's like, you know, people want to add, well, we only saw 15 seconds of the kid's life. Yeah, but those 15 seconds are the ones that the commercial wanted you to get, and that's what we saw. And that's problematic when you talk about, oh, well, this is courage or bravery or whatever. Some other people also mentioned that the fact that she eventually kissed back, because some people are like, yeah, all right, she flinched when he grabbed her, but then she starts kissing him back. And I also saw some people who were saying, like, yeah, but that's also problematic because that means that women are supposed to just take it on. If you force her, eventually she'll like it. And that's a, you know, problematic viewpoint. I think it's just symptomatic of you know, larger scale issue.
For me, it was sort of like interesting timing, given the, at least in the circles in which I run, the ubiquity of, like, the nice guys TM situation, which is that if you're nice long enough, if you're good long enough, if you aren't popular long enough, then you'll eventually earn the right to access the women that you want to sleep with. And yeah, it's 15 seconds. You can't really, like, flesh out a full character. But it is the tropes of a, you know, teen romance comedy sort of drunken fest, I'm sure. And in that movie, that girl probably wasn't going to be a fully fleshed out character. Even in a 90-minute movie, she wouldn't have had more than a hobby, maybe, like, you know, she'd have a name. She might have a couple friends, but she wouldn't have any more personality than the fact that they established that she's not catty, which is why it's okay for him to like her. So 15 seconds, 90 minutes, it's still part of that same whole shtick. So were there any other ads that you found to be problematic?
Yeah, most of them. No, but I think that there was one ad, and I don't remember for the life of me what it was for, which tells you a lot about how good the advertisement actually was. But there was a genie, and she was granting wishes, and there was a family, very nuclear family, and they were...
What? RAV4. It was a RAV4.
Okay. There we go. The car commercials. They were really winning it this year. And she... The family's making wishes, and, you know, there was at one point where the little boy is like, I want to go into space! And then the little girl is like, I want to be a princess. And it's just boys want to be astronauts, I guess, and actually have careers, and girls want to be princesses. And that's the only... Is that the only thing you could come up with for a girl to want?
Well, it was also interesting, like, just sort of the dad got the first wish, and he wanted to get rid of the spare tire. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about his stomach, and so it's like, oh, it's funny, it's a joke. So they take the spare tire off the back of the car. And then after everybody else gets a wish, then he's like, why don't I get a wish? And I'm like, wait a minute, you wished first, actually. You used it on something stupid. But that was a whole other, I don't know if that's a gender thing or if that's just that guy's dumb. I don't know.
Right, like there was sort of maybe like a little bit of an entitlement there, like I should get more wishes, like, because I'm the dad.
Because I fucked up the first time.
Yeah, like, I'm an idiot. Like, no.
I get more wishes. Okay, so any other ones?
Yeah, there was a Kia commercial where the women in the commercials were robots. They were no more than a car themselves, which is bad. Anytime that you literally reduce a person to an object, like a robot, which is not a human being, that's problematic. Women buy cars. There was the Coke commercial, which was somewhat questionable. Some people thought that it was offensive, other people didn't, where you had these four different groups who were vying for this like magical Coke that was like in the desert, like as if what you like you wouldn't want water in that case, you would want a Coca-Cola. But the idea was that there were four groups, and three of them were male. There were cowboys, this like biker gang, and this guy with a camel. I don't know what he was supposed to represent. Just be a dude with a camel, I guess. And then the only representation of women was a bus full of showgirls. And some people are saying, you know, well, how come the only women in the entire commercial just so happened to be, you know, dancers, and sort of sexualized, you know, whereas men at least have options. And I think that some people, you know, are arguing and being like, okay, it's a stupid commercial where, you know, but boys, you know, cowboys, they don't have that many, they don't have a whole lot of options either. But if you have three options versus one, that's more options than the women were given.
So that's just about general representation in the commercials, that they're pretty much limited to... And probably mostly, like, pretty white-oriented as well.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you tweeted during the game that I remember seeing was something, this might be a paraphrase, just because you don't find something offensive doesn't mean that other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so just out of curiosity, like, if somebody finds something offensive that the preponderance of other people don't, and they think that they're over-reading into it, they're being... like looking to be offended, like what do you think about that? Do you need to support them because they're part of a greater cause, or does it actually do disservice to the cause by calling out stuff where it's not necessarily really there?
I think in reference to that tweet in particular, it was a retweet that I retweeted someone else saying that, and that comment was specific to the, again, I don't remember like what companies these commercials were for, which is like so bad, but the commercial where the white guy was speaking with the Jamaican accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in response to that where a lot of white people were saying that's not offensive. People are getting really mad about this. And someone had made the comment of like, well, just because you're in a place of privilege and you don't find it offensive doesn't mean that somebody else might not. Like someone who might be Jamaican might find that offensive. And just because you can't see why it's offensive doesn't mean that it's not. But I think that your point, is valid. I think, though, that I do think that sometimes people look, when you're looking for something, you're going to find it at the end of the day. If you are looking for sexism, you are going to find it in whatever. And I think that feminists in particular get pretty bad, maybe not in particular, I think any marginalized group, any activists of a marginalized group get a lot of, oh, well, you're just overreacting and it's not even really there and you're just being ridiculous. But I think if it wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to find it. And I also think that part of it is that it's a symptom of an institutionalized problem, of a way larger problem. Like, people, when you think about the concept of, like, the patriarchy, like, I really don't imagine, you know, a bunch of guys sitting at a board meeting with, like, you know, patriarchy, like, split across the wall. I don't think. But finding symptoms of that overarching problem, it can be pretty easy if you're used to looking for it. And I think it does a disservice to a cause when people, not necessarily when people point it out, but when people are really negative about the way that they point things out. For example, I think that it's usually a really bad thing, and a lot of feminists are going to be mad at me for saying this, but I think it's a generally really bad thing when feminists will say, you're a misogynist because you said this, like, one sexist thing. Like, that's not, you didn't help. You didn't help that person understand why what they said was, you know, wrong or offensive. Instead, you just yelled at them. And now that person is never going to listen to a word that you have to say and might write off feminism as a whole because you just attacked them. And I think the same thing happens when you overreact, and by overreacting, become overly responsive about something that you could have taken a much calmer approach to.
So this is like that video where it's like how to tell someone that they're doing something racist as opposed to calling them racist.
Right, exactly. And I think a lot of people make that mistake. And that's, I think that hurts a cause more than anything, is when you alienate people that could maybe either be allies or just gain better understanding about themselves and the way they view the world. And as soon as you make a bigger deal out of a certain action than is necessary, then I do think that does a disservice, yeah.
In many ways, we've come to sort of, like, expect the Super Bowl ads to be bastions of sexism. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, like, why bother? But it's also, it's interesting because why are they? Like, why have we just come to expect that? Like, what is it about sports that's so intrinsically linked to that? Is it something about the demographics of people that watch it or the companies that choose to advertise during? What do you think?
I did a vlog about this recently where I was talking about the relationship between sexist media and sports. And I think that part of the problem is that specifically football is very symbolic of hegemonic American masculinity. It's a bunch of big, muscly guys knocking one another down while a bunch of really beautiful, busty women cheer them on. Like, that is what football is when you get right down to it. But the funny thing about football is that 44% of NFL fans are women. And over almost 50% of the audience of the Super Bowl is made up of women and girls. So it's a questionable thing. It's very strange because the ads are aimed at men, are aimed at a male audience, but the audience isn't entirely male. It's almost half and half. And besides that, even, the funny thing about sexist media, specifically sexist commercials and advertising, is that women actually hold about 85% of buying power in the United States, including, they also just so happen to make up about 50%, over 50% of purchases made of traditionally masculine products like cars, tools, electronics. So it's a wrong assumption that the advertisers should be going after men. They should actually be going after women. And that's kind of the excuse that a lot of people use. Well, it's a Super Bowl and it's football, and so it's all men watching. And if you want to advertise to men, you have to show breasts. Well, actually, men aren't doing most of the buying in the United States. Women are.
And yet, I mean, I guess it's just sort of symptomatic of a culture where male is the neutral. and women mm-hmm. are expected to be able to empathize with male characters and to be able to project themselves into their situations in order to see, you know, the story of the ad. But we can't ask men to do the same thing. Like, it's somehow beyond their mental capacity to empathize with a female an ad.
I think that, yeah, and I think that's so problematic. It really limits the way that we think about men. And I always find it really strange, actually, that more men aren't really pissed off at the way that they are portrayed by the advertising, like, community, because they really are portrayed as people who could not fathom what a woman goes through or what's happening, or, like, you can't, especially some ads, it really doesn't matter the gender of the person in the ad, you know, but they can't, like, are you so unable to look at a woman and put yourself in that position? And I made a point recently with someone where I was talking about something as simple as cereal mascots, because I was eating cereal one day. This is the life of a feminist. I'm eating cereal one day, and all of a sudden it dawns on me there are no cereal mascots that are women, that are girls. And the reason for that is because I eat a lot of sugary cereals. The kinds of cereals that are that have mascots are for kids. They're supposed to be kid cereals, not cereals for me to eat, but that's fine. And if you advertise something with a male character, both girls and boys will still want that product. But if you start advertising Cinnamon Toast Crunch with a princess, boys aren't going to eat that cereal. They're not going to want that cereal because that's a girl cereal. And you see it played out even with TV shows. I was teaching one day and I had two younger students. They were like in middle school. And this one kid was talking about how he like loves iCarly. He's like, I love iCarly. It's my favorite show. And the girl actually goes, oh my God, you like iCarly? That's a girl show. And I was like, what makes that a girl show?
He's got a girl.
Because there's a girl in it. So, I mean, it's crazy.
Because the main character is a girl? Because the title is a girl's name?
So, oh my God, the boys can't watch that show. And it's just this really strange idea that women will still buy products that are advertised for men, but men apparently cannot do the same.
This is kind of a tangent and sort of a weird throwback, but this reminds me of a conversation I had in like sixth grade, where I came to the realization that boys also watched Saved by the Bell, and so did the boy that I was talking to. We both had this epiphany at the same moment. He's like, girls watch Saved by the Bell? I was like, boys watch Saved by the Bell? And we both thought that the show was made for us and that like these were, you know, exclusive providences, which also goes to say how much I love Saved by the Bell. So the not buying a campaign, mm-hmm. How large of a reach does it have? You mentioned CNN. It's clearly getting some attention. How many people interacted with it?
A lot. There were about 10,000 tweets sent, from what I understand. Over, I think, 7,000 of those to GoDaddy alone. That's how bad that was. Yeah. But over 10,000 tweets, and that engaged over 2 million people. So over, it had a reach of over 2 million people. So over 2 million people had that on their timeline, and they were trying to tweet about, you know, whatever. First down, whatever the hell all that nonsense is, but what they were seeing on I'm just kidding, I know what a first down is, but and what they were finding was, you know, tweet the not buying it hashtag. I don't know if it trended this year, but I know that last year it ended up as a trending topic, so pretty, that's a lot of people.
And are there any other comparable campaigns that are going on that are specifically about media critique and looking out for sexist representations? Are there any other ones that people should know about?
I can't think of any right off the top of my head, mostly because not buying it is the most, you know, it's very prominent and it's ongoing. But there are definitely a lot of organizations doing a lot of work with media literacy and media criticism. Feminist Frequency, for example, Anita Sarkeesian's YouTube channel is a big one. Jennifer Posner, who's the author of Reality Bites Back, she's very active on Twitter and other social media about media literacy. There's some great ones that are really specific to men and questioning our thoughts about men and masculinities, like The Good Men Project is a good blog. There's Higher Unlearning, which is dedicated to helping men sort of dissect the messages that they get from the media. Women Action Media is another one. There's Fan Mail right here in Philadelphia. So there's definitely a lot of people that are doing the work because it is important. It's important to know how to digest what you're looking at. And if you want to continue to digest that stuff, you go right ahead. It's like looking at the label, nutrition facts on food. You want to put that shit in your body, go right ahead. But at least you know You know what you're doing. And that's the important thing.
I like it. And on that note, I just want to thank Melissa Fabello of Tough Cookies, of her own self, of, you know, whatever. You're in a lot of stuff. Yeah. You do a lot of stuff. How else can people find out about you and the stuff that you do?
Fantastic. You can go to my website, melissafabello.com, Twitter, at FYeahMFabello. Those are probably the best places to do that.
All right. And any other big projects you got coming up?
Oh, God. Too many.
You don't get to know.
My entire life is a project that I'm working on. How about that?
All right, fair enough. So now you know where to go and find out specifics and whatnot. So thank you, Melissa, for joining today.
Thank you, Timmery, for having me.
And thank you for listening. And we definitely want to hear back from you. So if you have any comments on the Not Buying It campaign, on advertising in general, and any of this stuff, feel free to interact with us on Twitter. You heard FYeah. What is it again?
FYeahMFabello.
FYeahMFabello. I'm Timmery _ Lee on Twitter. You can also hit up the Sex with Timmery Facebook page or sexwithtimmery.com, or you can comment on iTunes as well. So thank you very much for listening and have a good day. Hey, Sex with Timmery fans. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. All right, so if you are a fan of Sex with Timmery, or you're a fan of sex, or you like learning stuff, you got a few different options for events coming up where you can actually interact with me, we can chat in person, you can get some direct one-on-one info. So here are a few different places that I will be available in the Philly area. So on February 15th, as part of the Stimulus Parties, which are the most diverse but LGBT-oriented parties on the East Coast, they're huge, they're always amazingly big, tons of beautiful people, usually hundreds and hundreds. This party is going to be at Voyeur Nightclub in Philadelphia. And before the party, we're doing an all-female speed dating event. So if you are interested in meeting people for whatever reason, friends, dating, hooking up, whatever, you just want to interact with some folks before the party and actually talk when you can hear each other and the music's not crazy loud, that is definitely something you can check out. You can RSVP to get your spot for the speed dating by emailing stimulusparty@gmail.com, and they'll send you all the details. So that'll be Friday, February 15th, right before their fourth annual Red and Pink Affair. If you are interested in non-monogamy, which is anything other than one person and another person in an exclusive relationship, so, you know, any variation on that, open relationships, poly relationships, swinging, etc., we're going to be talking about that at a non-monogamy history and practice workshop at the Sexploratorium, which is related to Passion L Toys. So the Sexploratorium is in South Philadelphia on Passyunk, just south of South Street, on February 16th. So that'll be the day right after the speed dating. We're doing a lecture at 5 p.m. until 7 o'clock, and it'll be an interactive workshop where not only are you learning stuff, but you also have a chance to talk about things that pertain to your life specifically. So not just a cookie-cutter idea of non-monogamy, but what specifically is of interest to you, because we are all there together in the space, and it's a good time to talk about it. It'll be lots of other sex-positive grown-ups who will not judge, and will be able to have a real conversation. So if you're interested in that, you can get the tickets ahead of time, nonmonogamy.eventbrite.com. You can also check out, there's more information on Facebook, Non-Monogamy History and Practice with Timmery. And the next Sexploratorium workshop will be the next month, March 23rd, and that will be on troubleshooting your relationship. So we'll have more details on that as that approaches. But I will be partnering with Sexploratorium for future workshops. And if you have any ideas, any things that you want to have a workshop on, you know, just let me know. You can hit me up on the Facebook page, Sex with Timmery. You can tweet at me. You can comment on the website, sexwithtimmery.com, or however else, you know, you want to skywrite over my house. It's cool. I'm all right with that. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.